warm welcome, including Councillor Laws, who's on phone, obviously. I just asked councillors and staff to speak up so as he can hear. And good morning to staff and the media. And I'll declare our council meeting open. We'll start and call for apologies. We have one from Councillor Bell. That's the only apology. So somebody prepared to move, we accept Councillor Neill, seconded Councillor Robertson, that we accept Councillor Bell's apology. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. There's no request for leave of absence. Confirm the agenda as circulated. I'm not aware of any matters of a urgent nature that have been raised with me. Are there any conflicts of interest? We'll appear not. Right, we'll move straight on to public forum. We do have a request for a presentation in public forum, and welcome Mr. Jules Radich. And you understand the process around public forum, Jules, so welcome, and we're in your hands. And you've circulated some material, and we've all got it in front of us, so there's a copy. Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Councillors, if they have any points of clarification, you have presented this to the Dunedin City Council on Monday. Good, thank you.
Want to know what you're feeling?
Councillors.
Ah, where did they come from?
That's Christmas shopping.
Sorry, apologies.
Anybody got a Councillor Brown? Councillor Deacon.
Thank you.
Councillor Neil.
Yes, thanks very much for the presentation. This whole problem has been ongoing now for a considerable time, and the Media City have had a host of engineers look at this problem, and no engineer has pushed this particular solution. Why?
I've read a lot of the reports, they do suggest they would simply array the choices and do their research and make the decision on their part. Now they have to put out these choices to the question to decide. And it's a difficult when I look up and I've read the job, which is important,
we're well over time, so one last question, Councillor Scott.
Hey, Councillor Neil,
there you go. Everybody else comfortable? All right, thank you, Mr. Radish, and for your information. We're pleased to hear that you've presented to the city also. We acknowledge your enthusiasm and the time you've put into the research and pulling the paper together. I think I heard you say there's no consent needed. There would be a consent needed. It would be my understanding, but that's part of the process. And so, yeah, thank you, and good luck with your campaign. All right, continue on with our agenda, and there are no presentations. We'll go on to confirming the minutes of both the 1st of November, the council meeting, and the extraordinary meeting was not on the 1st of November, it was on the 29th, yeah, the agenda is 29th. Now, there is a change with respect to the minutes for the 1st of November, and there is a single page sitting on your table in front of you with the correct version of item 15, which is the recommendation to be adopted, that were adopted from the committee meeting. There was an IT issue on Friday putting together the agendas late on Friday, and so the electronic version you have is not accurate, but the bit of paper for item 15 on your table is, and it's simply getting the correct wording around the recommendations from policy committee, etc., etc., instead of the minutes from the various committees. So it's not a big issue. So with that change noted, is someone prepared to move the minutes of the 1st November meeting and the 29th of November extraordinary council meeting as true and correct? Councillor Hope, for a second up. Councillor Robertson, any discussion? If not, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Mm-hmm.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Alright, the action sheet has been circulated as part of our agenda, so if you, is one of the attachments, and if you have an opportunity, I'm sure to have read those. So there's one, the first one's closed, 11.1. There's a report coming back for part of the, with respect to, next stage of the process, Mr. Donnelly, with respect to Maori representation and constituencies. The leaders' declaration was signed, and LGNZ have been advised, and the delegations were closed. So they're all closed except for one item which will be coming up in the future. Alrighty, we'll move on to the next item on our agenda, which is the chairperson's report. Now the chairperson's report is a bit of a joint effort, so Councillor Robertson, I might ask you to comment on the first part of that where you attended on behalf of the council work to the regional sector meeting.
Just recently attended that. The first part of there says highest priority issues to raise are, but it missed out the bit that is that it's local government New Zealand highest priority issues that they wanted to raise with the new government. So it doesn't just include regional sector, it's right across the local government. So infrastructure and funding is their highest priority issue. Second and third are risk and resilience, like climate change and environmental issues. Fourth, social issues, and fifth there as well. So yeah, that was a bit confusing, but yeah, just interesting to see what they were focusing on. Perhaps not our highest priority ones, but yeah, the highest priority ones. Yeah, there were updates on various programs going on, like Water 2050, and yeah, you can read more on that. Looks like LGNZ will be doing a climate change conference next year, as well as another water one next year. Biodiversity, we have had a lot of work going on there and a report written on behalf of the regional sector, and I think we're going to have a workshop soon, Mr. McLean, looking at that think piece and what it might mean for Otago. So putting it in the Otago context and Mr. McLean's working on that, so that would be great. I did raise a couple of issues which were around wilding trees and the contradictory approaches there presented by the Wilding Conifer Management Strategy and the government's investment which we're utilising in Otago as well, and then the NES, which is for plantation forestry, which may well make it more difficult for councils to actually control wilding conifers. So the sector will raise that with relevant ministers and all agreed that really we can't wait for changes to that NES as a sector. So although we're hearing the message, perhaps wait another 3 years and we can address the NES, we don't feel that we can wait that long. K5 is progressing through the submissions process at the moment, and everybody thought that was just running smoothly. Wait and see. So anything else I missed particularly? Probably not. You can just read more there if you want to.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson. Couple of points further down the report I'll just note. At the Mayoral Forum we have the normal civil defence and more emergency management meeting, group meeting, and through Patio reports there, we have circulated, and they're in your inbox, a end of year summary from Chris Hawker, the Manager of Emergency Management at Otago. It pulls together all the information that was in his report for the group meeting, and there's a wee, some other summary there too, so take the opportunity to read that. It's a wrap-up of the year's work from emergency management. And the group has written too, with the change in minister following the election, has written to the new minister to encourage him to continue with the review that was we had submitted to, and as both individual councils and as a group. And so we're hoping that we'll see the result of that review from the panel soon, before Christmas. You'll see, and it's in the report also on your laptops, iPads, the coastal tsunami evacuation zone maps were released in early October, and we'll be having a workshop with Emergency Management Otago in the new year as an early part of shaping up their 10-year plan, their new group plan. Te Rupa Taiao, I think we're all aware that we're getting organised for Waitangi Day celebrations in Bluff this year, and we're going to have a joint Otago South and Mayoral Forum and Otago South and Te Rupa Taiao the following day. And Mayoral Forum, the one issue that I'd bring to our attention there is the Section 17A review on solid waste. And you can see there's some work being undertaken by Morrison Lowe, and the question was asked, can OIC be part of the early work looking at the future of solid waste management in Otago prior to the consent application process getting underway. So that's prompted down to staff, I understand.
Have we got the review of the waste strategy in our plans, work plans, and sometimes? It was 1997, I think, I remember it was written.
So this review is under the Section 17A, is looking at all the current landfills, their consenting timeframes, and what are the options going forward. There are several councils looking at changes in the end of their current, or the end of their consent and the operation of the current landfill. So is there opportunity for collaboration and working across the region or pan region? All right. Are there any questions on the chairperson's report?
What is the new name for OPKO now?
OCAR.
Got a meaning?
Yes, it has got a meaning. and I've had it explained to me several times, but I'll give it a go. So it comes from the lashing of a waka, and two teams, one on the inside, one on the outside, threading the lashing, and it's linked with kia kaha. One says o kaha and kia kaha. Yep. Yeah. Thank you for getting me out of the hole.
I think you did quite well.
Yes. But a timely reminder, we might drop him a note. I understand he's recovering. And, but yes, he did have an unfortunate situation. So that feeds up through the normal processes, zone meetings, sector meetings, interaction with council, to national council, and onto staff. These are key items that have been worked on, in some cases, for a number of years with the Crown.
In resilience ones, it comes into the second and third priority. Well, I guess it would be fair to say that the regional sector as well feels that they'd like their own voice to the new government as well, because they're not necessarily reflecting the sector's
priorities. Yeah, so this is local government as a whole. And that's why things like tourism levy and housing and super gold tend to dominate. And if you were sitting in some of the large urban council seats at the moment, you might have a different position, which is why that list is the way it is.
I'll just follow on one more question.
Councillor Lawton.
Councillor Robertson, in terms of the biodiversity, it's a great report by Mr. Nelson. And even just the summary, it's really good in terms of the 5 recommendations for change, and I guess it would be valuable for us to sit down as the Biodiversity Committee and just make sure that, you know, we are heading in the right direction. That would be cool. It's a good first thing to go back to.
I don't know if I'm necessarily in the time, but we've got some thoughts around all that change.
Okay.
I'll offer your paper.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be an interesting in terms of providing leadership to if there's actually action on the ground, but also it highlights the need to look at it from the national, regional, local levels and where those responsibilities lie. So does that mean that we'll get more I don't know, focused on the government itself, or actual code of the profession. Yeah.
Councillor Kempton.
I wonder if we could just return momentarily to solid waste. I think that we can get an achieve a solid waste is superior down the decent side continuing that work to get. One could surmise that the contractor who is working in the Stockland for operation contract for the need to possess would be considering their options for getting a landfill that they own in the city so that then they could take the city on a journey.
Yep.
And that would be a reasonable commercial way of looking at things.
Yep.
And then, of course, you've got smaller towns and trucking stuff to throw down the grounds in the
Limerick. Yep.
Right. Now, here we're talking about whether ORC has a role in regulatory framework collaborating prior to the consent application process. So that suggests that there is a pool that in fact the consent application process might actually be a process that this council might decide to undertake, or what does it actually relate to? Consent for what?
No, the way I interpreted the consultation at the time was let's have a chat with ORC now so we understand their perspective on options for the future as they're being investigated, rather than turning up with an application on ORC's front door and we don't know anything about it.
Okay. So it isn't as if there is some application sitting there on a regional for a regional and regional future.
No, but they're investigating very early stages of understanding the current situation and what the future might look like. And indeed, you're correct in identifying that there are some commercial players in this as well.
Yes, there are, and they're quite large.
Sure. Correct.
So it is, I guess from my point of view, I see it as very much a country.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that the is quite
well, the discussion was talking about, the potential, for example, for two landfills for Otago. But yes, Southland's only just down the road, and the scale of these and the controls and the processes needed around their management mean that they do need a bit of scale. All right, any further questions? Councillor Scott.
Just to acknowledge the report on emergency management, thank you very much for attaching that. There's some good information in there in relation to updates on mapping, training, mobile alerts, the survey, Lifeline's reporting. And are you saying that early next year we will get maybe some more detail and an update on where things are at?
And we'll be having a workshop as part of informing the early stages of the development of a 10-year emergency management Otago group plan.
Okay. So that's very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can't answer that accurately. I've been asked to facilitate a workshop. It's that very early stages of developing the group plan, and I think that they'll be workshopping with all councils, but I just wanted to make sure that we understood that yes, I'm seeing some nods in the bottom of the room, and that early in the new year we'll be having one with ORC.
One of the
Yep. Correct. Yep. Right up. There'll be a very public and open process as the group plan comes, works through it. Yeah. This one. I'll check with Chris and let you raise that point. Councillor Lawton?
There'll be a communication plan that goes alongside it in terms of rolling it out. I don't know that. So, media, but it's the best avenue to get the information out. Yeah. And get more strategic approach.
Anyway, yeah, I'll ask a question. Go from there. All right, no further questions. The Chairperson's report. We'll hand over to the Chief Executive's report. Mr Donnelly.
Okay, thank you. So my report is from the 20th of November. So I haven't made any comment to any of the meetings that Mr Boddicker might have been involved in the 2 or 3 weeks prior to that, although a lot of that activity has been covered by the Chair's report with things like Mural Forum and several other meetings. So first item I've got there is the Orbus launch in Queenstown, which was actually the first day, so that was the 20th of November. So I just wanted to comment on that as I've put there, this is the culmination of a significant amount of work over the last couple of years by this council and by staff in particular. It was almost a double launch because it launched not only the new subsidised service in Queenstown, but it also launched the Orbus brand as well. So we had both launches going on at the same time. In my view, it was a very successful launch. We had a good turnout on the day. Through the free travel in the first week, we had significant numbers of people using those on the buses, well, that I saw anyway, particularly on the first day, and what we hear is that continued through that first week as well. Other thing that I pointed out there was that the creation of the new, or the introduction of the new service has created 28 new driver jobs that obviously in turn created resourcing issues for the operator. But the operator's working very hard to fix those, and the creation of the jobs in itself is great for the area and for the region. Second item is Tyree flood meetings. So on the 21st and 22nd, we held meetings in Mosdale and Henley just to update the public on the flood event, and it was a good opportunity to hear from them the issues and concerns that they had. Jean-Luc Payan presented from a hazards point of view and gave an outline of the events themselves and levels of rainfall, et cetera, and some comparisons back to previous events. And both of those, well, there's three meetings, they were all very well attended by the public. Third item is the Roxburgh weather event, which had occurred around about the time that we had committees 2 weeks ago. The key thing there to note is that hazards staff are doing some work now to assess the debris flow, in particular where the Respire Creek joins the Clutha River, and there'll be a report back on that in the new year. I also met with two representatives from the Office of the Auditor General. They usually this time of the year go around just meeting with chairs and chief executives to outline their work program and just discussing issues that they or we might have. In our case, there was no particular issues to discuss. They did point out that they are commencing a piece of work on water management throughout councils. That document is available on your website, and it was included in the attachments to this agenda. It's quite a timely piece of work. So that will be ongoing through 2018. They have just started some of that work now, and they expect to release a report in early 2019. It is focused on water management practices across councils. It's not focused on actual water quality or any of the actual science. It's just around what councils are doing, and they'll come up with a series of conclusions and recommendations in the report. Environmental Enhancement Fund just outlined the grants that have been made since we last reported, which was back in September, on Environmental Enhancement Fund, and a brief note there just on Connecting Dunedin that we did have a meeting on that, but there's not, apart from reporting on the ticketing system and Wi-Fi on buses, which this council's already aware of, there wasn't a lot of update from us to that meeting.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. Can I, on behalf of council, just add our thanks to the whole team, some of your staff, but the communications and Ms. Sutton and the job that was done with the launching of the Orbus and the Queensland Public Transport. Huge effort behind the scenes and great result. Councillor Noon, you were representative of FIA, and you might want to add comments as well. Yeah, just make sure you speak up so Council Laws can hear.
Oh, this process started a long time ago, and I suppose the key trigger was the adoption of the plan back in 2014, which essentially set us on a pathway to make some significant improvements in terms of the way public transport was delivered, and it's a significant milestone what was achieved with the Orbus promotion and launch. So yeah, no, just acknowledging all the people that have been involved right through this process.
Yeah, great. And while we're on that topic, checked in with Mr. Collins earlier this week, and the go-cards are still rushing out the door, approximately 1,000 last week. There was somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 given away the first week, but so this is week 3 of paying passengers, I think it is, and we'll look forward to seeing some initial data on the uptake of the service in the new year. All right, questions for the Chief Executive Report? Councillor Robinson.
Environmental Enhancement Fund, it's great to see those there, and from a range of areas across Otago, because it's an even wider spread than monitoring the need in this space in the future, but there are absolutely some very valuable projects there, and good to see them coming through. People are aware of the fund. I wanted to talk about the water management review. Oh, I did read that proposed program, which has kicked off already, so I suppose it's not proposed. I looked in detail at it in the chapter 4, which looks at what the actual work program would be. And fresh water going to revisit Waikato, Taranaki, Horizons and Southland and see whether their programs have got any issues or are effective. Then monitoring irrigation, they're going to go to Marlborough, Canterbury, Northland, Hawke's Bay and Bay 20, despite the fact that Otago is the second largest irrigation region. Stormwater, they're going to focus entirely on reducing flooding. The marine environment, they're going to look only at reserve proposals and spatial plans in one specific area. So given that there is a lot of focus on this review and that it is very timely, as Mr. Donnelly said, there's a lot of public interest, that's what's generated this review. And there will be a lot of coverage of it. Our voice needs to be louder, I think, in Otago. We're not really involved at all, and our voice won't be coming through. to the new government, who will be looking very closely at the results of this. So, how are we going to achieve that? Perhaps, I know we're thinking of this already, but we do need to get in touch with our MPs as soon as possible and perhaps wider. And I know Councillor Woodhead will be raising it through RSG and other channels, but just wanted to point out how narrowly focused it actually will be, and that we need to be really mindful about this cargo story. Particularly, we do fresh water in a different way, but also irrigation, totally not there. And we've got a different story to tell there as well. So, just a comment, not any question or anything.
And that was raised some time ago now with them when they first said water was coming up on their focus. Their work program reasonably well, clearly advising. And it's purely a resourcing. So it's from an auditing perspective, it's the Office of Audit in general, and they look at bites. But yes, I agree completely. I mean, stormwater, and it's just looking at flood management. Really? But anyway, that's their prerogative, it's their work program. Mm. Councillor Kempton?
Yeah, look, I just want to reinforce the points that have been made with this. I also think that the four interest areas, not including wastewater, our wastewater, they say, is certainly, cargo not being there, just in slightly parochial ways. But I wonder if there is another way of getting the brief widened, whether or not we actually pay the Office of the Auditor General to go to our, because they are a commercial organisation. So it isn't necessarily saying you better put it in. We might ask them to do a parallel study around what we're doing for our purposes, and they might include what they're trying to do with it. If you engage them, that might be one way around it. But I think it would be a great shame about that. But I thought that overall the structure of that report will be really, really useful. I thought it was a really useful structure, but I just don't think it's quite closed off.
And excuse me. Is this the appropriate office to do it? Would be my question of if you're wanting to insert a ORC into it, I would question that. But anyway, they have a role on behalf of the government to run these reviews, and they pick topics, and this is what they've taken out of the heading called water. Yeah. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, no, I agree with the points that have been said. I think on the positive side, it's good that a review is actually happening. Mr. Donnelly, this in terms of the audit that occurred at this council, that's a point that I previously raised in terms of audit from an environmental perspective, and I look forward to this one. I would be interested in staff's reply to Councillor Robinson's queries in terms of, so how was this council going to position itself in terms of getting its message across?
Briefly, the discussion that I had with them, in particular around the fresh water with the four councils that were there, they were focused on them because they'd already done the work previously, so they were coming back for a follow-up, just trying to recall the exact discussion, but they were still going to be talking to all councils, and they were obviously pointing out to us that this was going on because they will be asking for input from us. But as the Chair said, with the detailed bites of work they're doing, yes, we're not actually included in there. I'd say that there's still, based on this discussion, it's still relatively easy for me to go back to them and just confirm what level of input we will get, and enforce to them that this council would be keen to to make sure that our voice is heard.
Yep.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. I think I read in here that, in fact, that this council was, in fact, involved in the audit process in 2005. I read that there's some reference in here to that. I'm trying to find it. Up to saying that, you know, we have, as a council, we've got some work to do to get our house in order as well. So, you know, let's take this time to consolidate some of the work that we're starting, particularly in relation to these catchment group work and risk assessment and so forth. Let's take this opportunity to progress what we need to progress.
Right. Any further questions for the Chief Executive's report? Councillor Hope. Comfortable. I'm happy to move that we receive the Chairperson's and Chief Executive's report. Secretary Councillor Lawton, I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye. Against?
Mm-hmm.
Carried. Thank you. On to matters for Council decision. Item 11 on our agenda, Regional Land Transport Plan Variation to allow excuse me, Queenstown Lakes District Council to upgrade their street lights to LED technology. Councillor Kempton.
An identical variation to the current regional transport plan as that which we dealt with recently for Waitaka District.
Yes.
And have dealt with what we've done in Church South and DCC, which is coming along soon, I'm sure. The $2.9 million to be spent in 2017-18, and that's one of the things that we're finding with our plan now is that we're having to be quite responsive at short notice to variations and the number of variations that we can expect to get rid of. But in any event, this year we've got a great return on the basis that LEDs are very much less energy hungry than what's currently used, but also the design of lights is generally better with respect to the night sky. So, it's as simple as that. We've done it. It's part of a program, and there is an end date to the availability of a high level subsidy, a special subsidy, from NZTA for it. So that's why I'm going to put that issue. That's all.
Yep. Great. Thanks a lot.
I know that one of the reasons why there were a number of councils pushing for that was actually to reduce light pollution in the night sky, which they haven't actually mentioned.
It wasn't mentioned here.
Oh, okay.
But we it certainly talked about it at our meeting. Yes.
Part of the basis for
it.
Yep.
Councillor
Scott.
Sorry. As a matter of interest, what was the cost saving, or is it cost neutral, or what was the cost? There wasn't a lot in the report. You've been asked to make it.
Well, certainly the report that the RTC have received, and I'm certainly I think that the return period is near 5 to 10 years.
Dollar teams.
But the fact that there's a payback period means that it certainly works from
Yeah, I mean, like as a council, we just sort of rubber stamped it, but there wasn't a lot of information in the report, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. So, and Ms. Turnbull's just joined the room, and she might have a bit more information if anybody specifically has a question. We'll just see if she's able to answer that payback period. There's clearly a drive nationally,
yes,
and some subsidy coming with that. That is encouraging councils to make this change.
Very much higher financial assistance rate this week than others, reflecting the
benefits in terms, yeah. Any thank you, Councillor Brown. The recommendation is that the Council approve the variation and with the addition of QRSD's LED streetlight project as set out in the attachment. Is there a seconder? Councillor Deeker. Any further discussion? I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Councillor Laws, can you hear us all right?
Yep, I'm still here.
Great. Right. Yes, we can.
Councillor Laws, we can hear the typing in the background. I'm just wondering if you could mute the mic when you're not talking.
All right, on to 11.2 of our agenda. Next item is standing orders. You might remember that this was a discussion at our previous meeting, I think. And so a paper has been done, thank you Mr McCabe, and that explains the rationale. And one thing that, well no, Mr Donnelly, do you want to introduce the paper for us?
You've obviously got a question that's going to come out. But, so as the Chair pointed out, this was raised at the meeting 2 weeks ago. And so we've had a look at standing orders and had a look at to understand the rationale of why the model that we use, the LGMZ model, and understand why it doesn't have matters arising as one of the agenda items, which previously matters arising were an agenda item under standing orders. So the report points out that that under the current standing orders, when the minutes come up as an item, the only thing that's being discussed is to confirm their correctness, and there's no discussion on the actual items that are in there themselves, unless they are either actions or they are agenda items themselves. Part of the rationale for that is that then allows the items that will be discussed to have been agended, so they're clearly stated so the public are aware that those items will be discussed. And if there is any item that does need to be discussed, that there will be consideration of the topic via an item and an associated paper. There is still the ability for late items to be added under extraordinary business, but again, if you look at standing orders, those items need to be noted when the agenda is confirmed as to why that item can't wait. And from there, if you actually look at standing orders, there is a general business, if you like, clause in there as well. It does state that there can be discussion, but there should be no decision on those items. And again, when you look at what LGNZ was trying to achieve through the model, is that they're trying to ensure that the public are aware of what discussions are going to be occurring and what decisions may be made prior to that actually occurring. So as a result, we've actually recommended that that matters arising as an agenda item shouldn't be included, but as the comment was made 2 weeks ago, the standing orders are this council's standing orders, so council can, if they wish, have whatever items they wish in their standing orders.
Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. And the point I was going to make was I went back to my notes from the time we the meeting where we discussed standing orders, and there was some discussion on it then, and we replaced matters arising with an action list. So any decisions at a meeting that required further action or something to be done were to be brought up on the next agenda, as we've done today, and highlighted and discussed or not at that point. But I did manage to find my notes from that many times. All right, thank you, Mr. Donnelly. Open the paper for discussion. Councillor Scott.
I'll kick it off, and I think from my perspective, I'm looking at down the ditch on this matter either way. I can see and understand the intent of what Mr. Donnelly's been saying. I think from a councillor perspective, there can be an issue in terms of the minutes where you feel it's appropriate to make some reference, and your ability to do that has been taken away in terms of matters arising. But then again, you have pointed out that matters arising can only be in reference to their correctness as opposed to a particular point. That's what you're saying, yeah?
Yeah, through the chair. When the minutes are confirmed, yeah, and that's the only place that the minutes are in the agenda and open for discussion, and yeah, standing orders states that all that is up for discussion is their correctness, not the actual
items. That's when the minutes
themselves.
Are confirmed. But
yeah.
Previously, under matters arising, the scope could be larger than that, yeah?
In the previous standing orders, yeah, matters arising allowed for discussion on any matter that was in the previous minutes.
Yeah. And I think that's not an unreasonable situation. You've brought in the fact that the public have a right to know, and I mean, we're not giving, you know, in terms of the whole city, we're not giving a lot of public interaction. I think in reality that negative point is relatively minor, but we do have the press, and the press will be able to take up the matter whether they're going to be there regardless. And then you balance that against the opportunity in terms of extraordinary business. But you're saying to raise a matter in extraordinary business would have to be done a number of days or 5 days prior or whatever to the meeting, yeah? Is that what you're saying? As opposed to on the day of the meeting?
And Mr. McCabe, you might have the section for extraordinary business, but extraordinary business would be something that had come up since the agenda had been set.
Yeah.
So obviously if we knew 5 days in advance, that could have gone onto the agenda.
Yeah.
So it would be an item that came up for whatever reason, probably in the, if we've got a Wednesday meeting in the 2 days prior. So it should be noted that an item has come up. Standing orders actually says it should be accompanied by a report from the chair, and it should we have to clearly state why the item is an extraordinary or urgent item that cannot wait until the next meeting.
Yeah, but what this report says is that the council currently does not include extraordinary business as an item of business on its agenda.
Yes, we don't include it as, we don't have a line item saying extraordinary business as such, but because it's in standing orders,
we could have.
We can bring items up, and it has happened in the past.
It has happened.
Some other councils do have, for example, they might have, you know, just a standing line item, the same way we've got actions. They'll have extraordinary business, and that way, when the agenda is confirmed, it can be asked, is there any items, and then that's where they would go. That would be their place in the agenda.
But if we did that, the chair would have to have a report. Is that the same time?
It's preferable, I think, whatever the word is. Yeah. But there has been times, even on the morning of the meeting, where something urgent comes up. And...
hey, I'm struggling with that.
Yeah. All right.
Those are technologies.
I don't even know where it is.
So we can bring the items of an extraordinary...
Absolutely. But it's not currently an item on the business of our...
No, we're not asking for them, but when they do pop up, extraordinary item, can we bring it to this meeting today or the one that's going to occur tomorrow? Yes, we can, provided council agrees.
Okay. I think the reason that I first raised this matter, whether it's matters arising or extraordinary business, is if there is a genuine matter that's arisen, our staff have identified through their action list to the best of their ability their action list, but from a councillor perspective there may be another matter that you identify that arises from the minutes that you wish to discuss, and to have that opportunity taken away is, in my view, not ideal.
Councillor Kempen.
I'd like to move the recommendation, and I've just had a couple of things to say, is that, okay, the minutes come up, we look at them and we say, are they correct or not? Yes, they're correct. And we look at them and often say, well, what happened about? And we have an action list that tells us what happened about or what is going to happen about and what progress has been made on that. Pretty much anything else is going to be relitigation. And we're not in the relitigation game. If there is an issue that's still a burr in your saddle, even though the minutes may have may record a conclusion that has come to, then there are other avenues in which you might raise that again, more formally. But we don't want to get into the relitigation game. So that's what I'm...
I'll second that, and just say the other thing as a matter of fairness, exactly what Councillor Kempen said, but if you have got something that you just wanted to raise that was new, it's fair to other councillors and staff that they actually understand in advance what that something else that's going to be discussed is, so that they've got a chance to prepare as well for your natural justice. So, yep.
Any other points? Alright, it's been moved and seconded. I'll put it, and the recommendation is that Council affirm the current structure and order of business for Council committee and subcommittee agendas without the additional matters arising as an item of business. I'll put it, all in favour please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
Carried. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. Good discussion. All right, on to item 12, matters for noting. Financial report, we have a revenue expenditure and financial position statement. Mr. Donnelly.
The finance report for the first 4 months to October. So this is the P&L and balance sheet. It doesn't include any breakdown or commentary on the actual activity reporting because that's included in the 4 month review, which is the next item on the agenda. So this here, obviously the P&L is only the operating cost that excludes any capital expenditure, and you see overall the surplus, it's actually deficit after tax is the variance to budget is $373,000. So it's at the overall deficit is actually very close to the budgeted deficit. There is a relatively big under and over in revenue and expenditure. The bulk of that, when we go into the next report on the 4 month activity, actually relates to public transport bus revenue, just in relation to the timing of when we budgeted the service changes in Dunedin to occur, which we had budgeted from the start of the year, and they actually occurred towards the end of the first quarter. So that's the primary reason why we've got a big under variance in revenue and a corresponding underspend in the operating expenses. But overall, as I said, the deficit is relatively in line with budget.
Great, thank you. And the recommendation of the report is received, I think. Yes. Open it for discussion. Mr. Councillor Seeker. Thank you. Is there a seconder, Councillor Brown? Any discussion? If there's not, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Yes, carry. Thank you. On to item 12.2, 4 month review. Welcome Mrs. Bodeker and Mr. Lanham. and the full 4 month review has been attached, and you'll see a short background paper, and the recommendation is that the report and the 4 month review to 31st of October, first quarter, just like the financial report which just passed, be received. Mr. Donnelly, is there anything you would just to add, or Mr. Bodek and Mr. Lennon at this point?
Well, as I just said, this obviously flows on from the previous report, but yep. This is the full activity report, so it reports on our spend both from an OPEX and CAPEX point of view. So the variance there is slightly different than the previous one, which was only OPEX generated. If you have a look after the summary, there is a summary of the under and over spends,
yes.
And we also break that down by where that funding comes from. So a lot of these variances have been reported through the previous financial reports. We do have an overspend in the flood protection area, which, as we said, there's two reasons for that. One is some timing around some of the leak that's happening, work that's happening in the leak, that actually related to last year's budget that is still being completed this year. And there was the additional spend in the in relation to the July flood as well. Offsetting that, there is some underspends, and as I just pointed out, the biggest underspend is in the public transport area around the around those bus contracts and the timing of introducing those. And there's also the spend that is yet to occur around the bus hub, which will now be occurring in the new year, and the timing of that the budget is yet to occur already in this financial year.
Great, thank you. Open the report for discussion. Into the detailed report itself, the one that stood out for me and quite pleasing to see was near the end of the report was the increase in patronage for Dunedin Public Transport. Quite a significant jump actually over 3 months, August, September and October. Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to make. I think that one of the things we've seen is actually since the introduction of new contracts, there was a very clear increase, and that has been maintained at 5% of the problem, in fact 6% above where we've been now for several months. And so I think it all is quite well for the future around essentially the results of the 2014 review. I had two or three other things that I wanted to note here. Under transport, there was no reference. There's reference to quite a number of public transport things, but there's no reference to the fact that we have prepared a consultation draft of the regional transport plans. So that was a really important piece of work, and a lot of staff time went into that. And I actually think it'd be nice to see it in the 4 monthly report. Simply because it is a milestone, and particularly because it was put together under a new framework and so on. So that's just maybe if it's minted, that's fine. I remain concerned about continuing slippage around the Cadrona and Manuhiri-Kia minimum flows and the deemed permits, and we know that this is a kind of a who's going to blink first thing in the broadest context. We've still got to keep a significant amount of pressure on there. If at 4 months we've got some slippage, then there are going to be at 12 months. And so it's an old hobby horse of mine, but it still hasn't gone away. And one of the other things which relates to, in fact, I think it was deemed permits, and I offer this criticism with as much respect as I reasonably can, and it also relates to the apparent continuing slippage as a result of the notice of requirement process. We're now told that the bus hub is slipping back again. And I think that the two things have got one thing in common. I mean, the deemed permit thing slipping back when we say, oh, well, you know, there was lambing and that's held us up a bit. Lambs, sheep lamb every year. And to my mind, we're not planning comprehensively enough with all of those constraints in mind. And my belief is that with respect to the buzzer, I'm not sure if we went to look for a notice of requirement at the optimum time, because that notice of requirement ended up being a relitigation of lots and lots and lots of detail around the bus hub. But at the same time, I think that sometimes we're very optimistic around the statutory processes. And so in both of those situations, I think that our project management, particularly our project planning, simply isn't comprehensive enough on the basis that many of the issues that cause slippage can be anticipated. And so that's, with respect, I know the people who are working very hard on those projects, something we need to keep in mind.
Any further comment on questions and comments to review? Councillor Lawson?
I guess having explained the second time I've seen the report and some of the measurements, individual measurements I've got questions about, but I feel like I might take it offline to go a bit detailed.
Yep.
It is a funny way to think about it when and have a green light on something that actually hasn't been done yet. And some of them get it pretty confusing. If you're outside the organisation looking in, you'll be going, what's all that about? So I guess it's what's the purpose of the 4 months report for us or the public.
Through the chair, I can understand your point. The reason why these, we'll look at some of these with a green light, because we're undertaking the work that we're making good progress with the work, and we're on track with the work that we've got to do or that we say we're going to do. So we're trying to highlight that we either don't see now, or we're not anticipating that there's going to be any issue with getting that work done. If a lot of these pieces of work might take some considerable amount of time, it would probably, in our view, the green indicates to councillors from a governance point of view that we're on track and that it's all okay, as opposed to saying, well, we make it red or yellow until it's actually complete, and that might give the impression that we're not actually doing anything with it. So it is a fine line between how do you interpret it, but what we're trying to highlight here is that green means that there's no, you know, it's either being done or it's on track.
I think too, the just being really clear that the green is about the work plan, because there's sort of some of the work that's been shown to have been done, but there's actually a negative outcome. I think like some of the water quality stuff, because some of the water, you know, ways are in decline in terms of water quality, but we've got a green light to do good the work.
Yep.
So it's just being really clear in the actual reporting that, you know, if someone from outside the organisation is reading it, that they can.
So it's primarily a check, internal check, on how we're going with progress of the work plan.
Yeah.
And so we can see management level issues coming, etc.
Yeah. It's still, I think, helpful to just keep that in mind. It could be one liner based on work plan rather than quality. I don't know.
All right, the recommendations of the report and 4 months review to the 31st of October be received. There's no further questions. Is that a question, Councillor Noon, or are you happy to move that recommendation?
I'll move, Mr. Chair.
Second, Councillor Deeker.
Thank you.
And a very good point. And because in some cases there were substantial changes, a lot of route simplification, and we do hear the stories from people that are impacted, but clearly, if this continues over 3 months, it's the start of a trend, and it's quite a reasonable number for the scale of Dunedin's. Yeah. And I think this is the first time we've actually seen that. I might be wrong. It might have come through in committee reports, but to see it from that. So I agree. And Sutton is we're working. So it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? About the media release, I think. It would appear not. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Right, on to item 13, report back from councillors. And Councillor Lawton and Robertson attended the Young Elected Members, which is an annual get-together, I think. Was it a conference?
One, and it was run like a conference, yeah.
Yeah, my apologies, it was the first annual conference, but there's been a Young Elected Members as part of LGNZ for the last few years, and they had a meeting at conference and I think at other times of the year, but they've got together this time. So, councillors, do you want to give us some feedback? Councillor Lawton.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson, for starting this up. I think there was a lot of value in having this group come together. There were about 26, 30 of us, I think. 26, there you go. And, the under 40s only make up 66% of the overall elected members. It is actually quite a small group. There was some really great opportunities for professional development, particularly around the media, which really keen to talk to the council about more. But also, I think there were some specific issues relating to young elected members, and we've just put in a submission to the Remuneration Authority. Specifically, how do we, I guess, continue to achieve diversity within councils around the country in age. But also we had, whether or not there needs to be better women's representation. So the highest women's representation was up to 36%, and that was a couple of terms ago. It's since dropped. And diversity in terms of cultural diversity as well. We were actually looking at ourselves in terms of the young elected members and going, we're actually doing all right around the table. There's really good representation, in terms of gender balance and cultural balance. So how do we, I guess, continue to have that roll out through councils as, time goes on? So we did spend not so much of the actual official time talking about that, but a lot of the, over dinner type conversations. With some really good ideas around how to engage youth in local government, and particularly in terms of voter turnout going into the next election, as well as younger people standing for election. There's already some really great youth engagement events that happen around the country, and one particular conference around Festival for the Future, which I've been involved in previously, which is held in either Wellington or Auckland, and run by Guy Ryan. And so bringing together hundreds, I think they've had about 500 young people attend the last one. And it's an amazing, 900. Sorry, I think it's even up. It's a really amazing opportunity to get all those young people together and to look at New Zealand and reflect on the future of New Zealand. And there has been talk about potentially getting scholarships from councils to support young people to attend those. And I think in terms of, Otago benefiting from a nationwide perspective, particularly for young people, is a really good opportunity. So, those are really big standout discussions, really.
Great. Mm. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's covered most of it, and it's in quite a lot of detail, but just wanted to thank the council for giving us that opportunity to attend that. It wasn't a small thing to be able to attend, and yeah, it's four young elected members, which I won't be part of for that much longer, but the way of thinking, I think, and thinking about the future, that's important. And the one thing that came out of it as well is discussing community and what is actually community, and there's three communities here, community of place, community of interest and community of future. And we've had the past, we need to always be thinking about the future as well, and it is really important to have young people, and I don't see myself as young in this category, we're young people thinking about the future, and we are not engaging enough yet in local government. Also, we need to probably just say about localism. I know the LGNZ magazine had an article on it recently, but certainly it's a real focus for local government in New Zealand at the moment. Malcolm Alexander and some other key business leaders, CEO of Air New Zealand and some others, went to Switzerland and looked at the model there, which involved hundreds of thousands of local government bodies, down to the size of 15 people to a local government body in some instances, and just a competitive model too, so you're rewarded for the amount of GDP your body is producing essentially, and looking at that as a model for New Zealand. So there's a lot of talk going on about that at the moment, bringing more power and focus to local government rather than less. So interesting to discuss that. And Ella gave a presentation too, which was also really, really good to see Ella in her professional capacity and all the skills that she can bring to the table there. Very interesting to see who is around tables and what's driving them from that 6%. And many of them have overcome extreme adversity to be at the table, and are very passionate people for their community. To be at the table for a lot of them, and district councils particularly, they're getting paid nothing and giving their all, so it's quite a unique position, I think. And we're just talking before as well about how local government's changed so much, that actually having a full-time job and being a councillor is quite difficult, especially probably for those people in districts and towns. It was really valuable to be there. So thank you again to everyone for supporting us to do that.
One last comment, I guess, highlighting that I think there's the issues that bring younger people together around just time of life, but we were very aware that being young doesn't necessarily mean that you think in a certain way, and being older doesn't necessarily mean that you think, and in fact it is about your state of mind, but it's also about your values and experiences that you bring to the table. So it really comes back to diversity, it comes back to having all of those different views around the table rather than young and old, but it's the way of categorising.
Good point. Councillor Deacon.
the year we did a really interesting session that was valuing all of the generations that actually that we have around the table and what they bring to the table and the way that they think, so that we can understand perhaps, because we've had some people there who are under 20, then you've got some people who are probably over 80, and the way we think is different and through those decades. And we all bring different things to the table. We had a really good session on that.
I'm glad you get the bar for the eyes.
Well, we do, you know.
We can talk about the entry level for the old elected members over lunch. Ms. Clarkson, would you like to? Yeah. Good comments. Just a hope.
Sure, I guess so it was bringing together two areas of interest for me. So there's the likes of procurement through an organisation is actually, you know, where money hits the road. It's where, you know, we've agreed to bring in goods and services, but actually it's where we spend our money, and we can have considerable impact on our broader community as to where we decide to do that. So I've done a TEDx talk on localisation and how that money revolves around the local community. Our procurement policy is actually where we make those decisions, and often we, as an organisation, we don't pay a lot of attention to that, but it sets out the policy and decisions about how we select what goods and services. And so there's been some really great work done in the likes of Auckland Council, where they have gone through that with a fine-tooth comb, particularly taking examples from Australia and saying, actually, you know, as a local council, we have a lot of we have a lot of responsibility about responsible spending and efficiency, but it depends how we measure that efficiency. So is it purely on the amount of money we spend, or is it actually amount of the impact going back to our community? So you can have social and environmental impacts through goods and services procurement, not just an efficiency around cost. You have to put in additional measures as well as also changing the procurement policy to make sure that you're still showing your efficiency. One of the ways to do that is to work in with businesses that have a lens of corporate social responsibility, or social enterprise is the other term that's being used. If you're a social enterprise, you're already showing the value that you're giving back to your community by providing those goods and services. It's kind of a really easy way for council to not have to pay too much time and money in having to completely change their policy and measurements, but actually just using others' reporting processes to show the value of how we're spending ratepayers' money. I just think that the value that we can give back by using ratepayers' money to give back to the community, which is then in turn, you know, increasing employment and the strengthening the local economy is just a no-brainer.
Yes. All right. Good. Any other councillor report back? Councillor Noon?
Thanks, Mr Chairman. On Sunday I attended a meeting for the Greater South Dunedin Action Group. Councillor Decker has lodged an apology, but there was a turnout of around about 40 odd. Just really 2 points to pass on. One was around the discussions the group had had with the Chief Executive of Dunedin City Council, the Super Rose, around enhancing the stormwater system within the Dunedin catchment, South Dunedin catchment area. And the other point is that they plan to meet with the new Minister of Climate Change, Mr Shaw, in the new year. The group's enthusiastic and tracking on, and the Honourable Claire Curran presented in terms of, on behalf of the new government. And so there's a lot of positive support.
Good.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on.
Attended all of the, we've seen some really good minimum flow discussions, the Arrows minimum flow workshops held last week were really successful. Thank you to Tanya and her team and science and everyone else who helped to support that. There was good turnout and it's trucking along really well, so congratulations on that. The other event that I went to was something called the Great Southern Tourism Opportunity, held by Queenstown Lakes District Council, and it brought together all the RTOs, but also a number of the central government, and also a number of the other high visitor areas in New Zealand. It was a really interesting discussion about how we need to move forward because of the possible impacts of that visitor industry. So Tourism New Zealand have been doing some really good work, particularly around destination management, so looking at the impact of visitors on the local community and how we handle that. And then of course a lot of that came back to how do we actually pay for it in terms of infrastructure. But it's just a heads up that there, that part of our region is constantly looking at how we're going to deal with these numbers that we're potentially getting through the door. There is some information I can get through in terms of this site.
All right, we'll move on to item 15 of our agenda, which is the recommendations from our committees. We'll rattle through them before we get into item 16, where we need to go into public exclusion. Recommendations from the policy committee. Robertson. Yes, Councillor Robertson moved. Is there a seconder? Councillor Hope, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. The recommendations from the Regulatory Committee.
Move.
Councillor Scott. Seconder, Councillor Neal. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Communications Committee. Thank you. Seconder, Councillor Hope. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Recommendations from the Technical Committee.
Move, Mr Chairman.
Seconded, Councillor Lawton. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Recommendations from the public portion of the Finance and Corp. Move, Councillor Brown.
Seconded.
Seconded, Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Now, we've got the recommendations from the Regional Transport Committee, and I just want to make clear that there is a recommendation there that they're questioning the quorum that is set in the terms of reference for that committee, and so that's in us accepting the recommendations from that committee doesn't mean to say we're accepting a change to the quorum. That'll be a matter that will need to come back to committee or Finance Court Committee, potentially, Mr Donnelly, or no, it'll have to come to council.
It'll have to come to council.
And so just in case you might have seen that in there, and just want to make sure we're clear that we're accepting the recommendations, we're not actually accepting that change to terms and reference. That is a job for council to do, and it'll turn up in the new year and we can have a discussion at that point. So the recommendations from the Regional Transport Committee. Moved, Councillor Kempton. Seconded, Councillor Noon.
He's got a question as well, Mr Chairman, from Councillor Kempton. On the last item 5, the last bullet point. Mr Harlan noted the importance of Otago to the region in transporting produce and suggested that ORC could be approached to make a contribution to the cost of this project through their dividend from Otago. I was just trying to understand what the project was he referring to. It didn't seem to line up with talking about what project. Sorry.
It should say, I remember the discussion. It has certainly slipped my mind.
Righto, we can follow that up.
That's on.
Yep. And it sounds like it's comment in the meeting rather than part of the discussion that's obviously been recorded in the minutes. It wasn't significant. Righto, that's fine. Anyway, we've got a mover and a seconder for the recommendations. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right, on to item 16. Ms McDonald, what does that buzzing mean? We do need to move into committee for several items on our agenda. The basis for moving into committee has been circulated as part of the agenda explanation. Somebody happy to move, or I'm happy to move that we go into committee. Seconded, Councillor Noon. Any discussion? It appears not. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you.